is going on in Egypt, in Tunisia? Protesters today in Tunis, the capital of Tunisia, as the so-called Jasmine Revolution, named after that country's national flower, continues. Protesters toppled the president on January 14th, but the ripple effects are obviously still being felt in Tunisia and also in neighboring Egypt. In Cairo today, riot police scuffled with protesters again. Yesterday, five people were killed, including a policeman, when thousands clashed with police, throwing rocks, chanting, "Mubarak is leaving," referring to that country's longtime authoritarian president. Nearly 900 people have been arrested in Egypt during these protests. So what's going on? We've heard reports for 2 weeks now out of Tunisia. We know this isn't an Islamist movement, but will it become one? Who is behind the protests in Egypt? What role is social networking playing, and will this spread to other parts of the Arab world? The BBC's Middle East editor, Magdi Abdelhadi, joins us from Tunis. And Magdi, welcome back to you. And to Egypt first, you're in Tunisia, but Egypt is so hot right now. And yet we know this protest in Egypt was scheduled. 90,000 people signed up on Facebook for this day of revolution. And the Islamist group, the Muslim Brotherhood, said it wouldn't participate. So who did? Who organized Egypt's protests?
Well, I think Egypt took everyone by surprise because there have been many similar attempts, internet-based, Facebook, Twitter, etc., to launch nationwide days of protest, and they more or less fizzled out, and everybody expected this to happen. But this time, I think, inspired by what happened in Tunisia, the young, it's predominantly the young people, the internet generation was behind this, who are in touch via Facebook and other websites, what is happening in Tunisia. They felt, if the Tunisians can do it, why can't we? There were people with slogans on the streets of Cairo taken from the protests in Tunisia. Young people wrapped in Tunisian flags. People on Facebook and Twitter changing their picture to that of the Egyptians, that is, to that of the Tunisian flag. So there is no doubt about the role of the internet and social media in mobilizing and organizing people. But Tunisia is an added factor. The fact that Tunisia did it is actually spurring Egyptians and possibly other Arab peoples to do the same.
Well, we're reading reports on the ground in Egypt that even the protesters themselves look surprised. But just tell us why this is happening, because we understood in Tunisia there'd been a tacit agreement that the people would trade a steady economic growth for restricted political rights, a corrupt elite. But we know that there was one incident, a young vendor sets himself on fire and out of frustration with public officials, and that just launches the huge protest in Tunisia. Was there a parallel story in Egypt of a people accepting Hosni Mubarak for several decades? Because we know there's a lot of poverty in Egypt.
There are similarities and differences. In Tunisia, the standard of living is higher, standard of education is higher, and the higher the standard, the greater the expectations, and people couldn't put up any longer with a very authoritarian regime, probably more so than the Egyptian one, where the slightest hint of criticism wasn't tolerated. In Egypt, Mubarak has tolerated that kind of criticism, and that gave people some kind of a safety valve to get it off the chest. In Tunisia, there was great disparity between the people of the south, where the revolt started, the spontaneous uprising, and people in the north, the coastal region. Most of the investment went to the coastal region. Very little did go to the southern region. But the Tunisians themselves want to emphasize the people who prevented this young chap who eventually tragically set fire to himself when they prevented him from selling vegetables in the street. Tunisians say it was because of the insults they yelled at him. I think one of the council officers slapped him on the face. Mm-hmm. And that was an insult to his pride, to his dignity. Many Tunisians have said that. It is not only bread. They say we're human beings. We don't only live by bread. We live by liberty and dignity as well. In Egypt, the story is similar but different. There is a youth bulge, mass unemployment, a government that is very old president. People around him have been in power for so long, getting out of touch. The latest parliamentary election, widely held as illegitimate, so legal channels to express discontent are blocked, and then comes Tunisia, and the people just collectively snap.
Well, in Tunisia, where you are, the president, as we said, was toppled. He's fled the country. He's now in Saudi Arabia. There is a new government forming, but it keeps some of his old government members, and that's why we're still seeing protests. What do you think will happen there in Tunisia? Start there.
Well, that is the problem. There is a die-hard group of protesters who are determined to stay on the streets, no matter what the police does, no matter what the government does to reassure them that there will be a break with the past. They say, we will not leave the streets until every single minister, including the prime minister himself, who served Ben Ali for so long, leave their offices. They cannot believe that people who supervised or were part of a regime that rigged elections, suppressed them politically, and discriminated against certain regions economically, they don't believe that those people who are partners of the ousted president can deliver the change they're dreaming of. They lack credibility. The government has done all kinds of things, the latest of which is the announcement of an international arrest warrant for the ousted president and his family. But the protests continue.
Well, and to Egypt, where, by the way, some of the energy for those protests is drawn from a similar incident of a young man who his family said he was beaten to death by police in Alexandria last year. So there's a personal story, a personal incendiary story that's also touching off protests in Egypt. But where do you think the story goes there? Is Hosni Mubarak going to be forced out in Egypt?
It all depends whether the young people, the angry, the frustrated, and they were joined, of course, by various opposition groups, whether they will keep up the pressure and also prepared to pay a price for that. If they do, if they claim back the streets from the police and the security services, that would be a huge psychological boost. After that, it is very likely that they will increase the pressure on Mubarak with the hope that they can force major political concessions that may ultimately force genuine and radical political reforms, which will, sooner or later, Mubarak is 83, may force Mubarak either not to run for office again or force some kind of a political shake-up of the system that will create the space for genuine political participation of the people who've been denied rights to campaign freely and take part in parliamentary elections.
Magni Abdelhadi, the BBC's Middle East editor, speaking to us from Tunis, the capital of Tunisia, by the way. Go to herenow.org for a slideshow of protests in both Egypt and Tunisia. Magni, thanks as always.
You're most welcome.
Okay, before we take a break, a quick look ahead. Tomorrow on Here and Now, Super Bowl ads. This year they'll feature the Talking Babies, but also Kim Kardashian. We'll hear how low-browed ads are meant to get you to social media to talk about them. That's tomorrow. Up next, the lowbrow and the highbrow, philosophers lousy at love, Here and Now.